Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. What do you have in store for us today?
At least we don't have any alarming weather predicted. It's below freezing and little snow has been predicted, but I think that's mostly for the weekend.
Well, after last week, we can be happy if the conditions don't lead to dangerous driving with windy conditions, especially for those people going home for the holidays.
Holiday travel inspired today's program, which is about how immigrants are celebrating Christmas. So it's an international holiday program.
Well, that sure sounds like fun. I've spent a few Christmases in some unusual places in the past.
Well, we're not going to any of those places today, but we have a lot of people to tell about them, including you, I think. You spent some Christmas in some pretty unusual places, but I want to pick up our story with Sudan. Last week, you know, we were going to actually have a Zoom call to Sudan, but that didn't work out. But those who were listening know we were trying to bring Owen Majak to the studio. But lacking that, we contacted another Sudanese woman who's living in Ames who offered to describe Sudanese Christmas celebrations. Sandra spoke with us yesterday, so let's hear what she had to tell us.
My name is Sandra. Formerly Sandra Borrow, now is Sandra Owech, and I came from Sudan through Egypt. We got here in America in November 2003. I was 23 years when I got to America. We've been here 18 years right now.
So you had celebrated a few Christmases in Sudan before you came. Now, did you have a community that you came to?
Yeah, we have relatives here, my husband's aunt.
And did you have an apartment or have a place to stay when you first came?
I have an apartment when I first came.
Okay. So I came in November. So I've been told that the Christmas celebrations in Sudan start early and last through New Year's. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, would you tell what they're like?
Usually in Sudan, from around this time, the 20th, from the 15th, I would say, people start preparation, you know, for Christmas. And you can see the sign that there's, you know, something. As us being there when we were young, it was really a big deal for us, you know. First of all, parents or guardian, you know, they'll be cleaning the house, washing all the dishes. And in our family tradition, we have, you know, big family, so they will slaughter a cow, okay, and it'll be divided into four. So that will be with the main big houses. Like on the 24th, people will be celebrating in one house, all the meals and everything, cookies, name it, everything. And then on the 25th, we'll go to another house, one of the relatives. And then on the 31st, the same thing. And on the first is the same thing. So it's like four major days in this, on December and New Year, first of the year, which is New Year, that we celebrate. And it's just excitement of eating a lot of meat and all that, because it's not a regular thing that you do every time, you know. So then there's cookies behind it. There's candy. We go door to door knocking and celebrating, you know, wishing our neighbors, friends, Happy Christmas, and they will give us cookies in return for that. And other people will be like Christmas caroling. They'll be singing. They come to your house and knock at your door. They start singing and dancing, and then you have to give them some money or give them food to eat. Then they will go to the next door. So it's just a lot of happiness and joy. The church we go to, like, celebration, long hours of prayers, not only like 1 hour or something. It's a long day. So it's just full of joy. You know that, you know, you, as a child, you know that really this is the time Jesus was born, and it's very important that you celebrate it. And you're waiting so eagerly for that day to come.
And do you go to a church service?
Oh, yes. On the 24th, there's a church service. You know, the choirs, I used to be in a choir too. So on the 24th, there's a church service. On the 25th, there's a church service. And also on the 31st and on the 1st, all those days, there are church services.
Now, is this a Sudanese church? Is it a Catholic church? What kind of church is it?
There's Sudanese churches and there's Catholic churches. By then, I used to go to Catholic church, so we do the same thing. We'll pray until like midnight, and after that, you go home. And in the morning, also, there's a church service on the 25th.
And so when you came to America, you said you had family here. So, mm-hmm. But you couldn't obviously slaughter a cow and divide up the meat and go from house to house. So what did you do when you came to America?
In America is so different. It's almost like everyday thing. It's nothing really new. You know, we still, for me, I still, you know, let my kids know, you know, we still clean their house, change our curtains, do, you know, put Christmas tree on, bake cookies. And I did some yesterday with my friend. And, you know, those things are there. And as a normal thing, they always, you know, and back home we also get some new clothes. So I do the same thing here for them. We do go to church, but it's not like back home with the families, you know. And you don't see the sign of Christmas on everybody. It is you, your own way of celebrating it, knowing that it is Christmas. But in Africa, like in Sudan, the whole entire, you know, neighborhood, you will know everywhere. Even the stores are closing for days. Like here, we only have the 24th and the 25th. For example, on the 25th, as myself, I'm still working. I'm going to be working till the 24th. You know, we'll be closing at 2 to come home and then continue with our Christmas celebration. Then we'll go to church. But in Africa, like from the 20th, some people are already off. And they'll go all the way maybe to the 2nd or the 3rd, maybe the 7th of January before they go back to work. All of these 2 weeks is all free for kids and grown-ups.
And what do you do in those days? Obviously, you don't visit Santa Claus.
We don't have Santa Claus. I don't know nothing about Santa Claus back home. But we do, you know, that's after you finish with your immediate family, then you go to your friends, you know. You visit friends from here and there, and there's distance where you can go. So you go there, and then the next day they come to your place, and this is the time where people are celebrating. Then after that, you recuperate before you go back if you're working. But for us, by then, we just go to school.
Well, there are any, you say everybody, you can tell everybody's celebrating, or everybody, but what, and could you say it again? They're all, you can tell everybody's celebrating Christmas the same way. What are the signs? Do they wear special clothes? Do they, what do they do?
First of all, you know, of course people buy new clothes during Christmas time to wear. And back home, not everybody will get it. But sometimes during Christmas is very special that every parent needs to buy something new for their kids to go to church with it. And that's the happiest moment for little kids. And at the same time, like right now, you come to my house, maybe you can see something different. And the whole neighborhood, there's really, you can see like, you know, the Christmas trees, lights and all that. This is the only sign you can tell here in America, Christmas tree decorations. Or maybe if it's in Thanksgiving, the same kind of decoration, you know, different decorations for Thanksgiving sign and stuff. But, like, for instance, most of the stores here on the 25th, some of them are open, they're not closed. But you will never find one store open. You will never find one store open in Africa. All the stores will be closed. Everybody is celebrating. People are having parties, are going to church, you know, singing, you know, even on the street. People are passing by, they'll tell hi, Merry Christmas from far. You will see just the joy is always there with everybody. You know this is a different moment, this is a different season. So it's really something good. But here in America, not everybody would like to celebrate Christmas. So you keep it to yourself. You don't go out there and start like telling everybody, hey, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Some people might get mad at you because maybe it's not something that they celebrate. So you have to keep to your limits.
And what about lights? You don't. You have Christmas trees, do you?
Yes, I do, but not back home. Right now they have it, but back then, before when I was there, we don't have those things. But, you know, we can have balloons, different kind of clothing, like the materials, and then they will be connected together, or the tailor will sew them. They'll be put on the streets. You know, this is a sign where people will see. Like for us here, say you have a wood floor, but back home, most of the, you know, homes, they don't have floor, they don't have wood floor or ceramic or something like that. So you have to, you know, mix the clay and spread it all over and make it really smooth. You know, that's what I used to do that too. And that's telling you that you really clean your house from inside to out. Then you're making the cookies and all that. It is just that's why most of our people right now here, when they want to go to Sudan, they go around Christmas time because it is a lot different.
So that's why Win Majak went, why I couldn't get hold of her last week.
She is in Sudan right now, and not her alone. A lot of our community here went from Ames and Des Moines. They went to Sudan to celebrate Christmas there. But not just that. Win Majak will be coming back because her kids are here, so she had to come here. But the moment she's there, she already enjoyed the Christmas spirit back home.
Is there anything you would like to add to this?
Not really much, but the difference here in America, you see that, you know, the Christmas lights all over, like Jolly Holiday lights. This is where you can see, you know, the Christmas time is coming. But here also in America, every season have a different decoration. So that's always there. But the decorations are there, but, you know, for you to see it from the people, I don't see it. You know, you don't see it like that. Because people are tied with jobs. People are, you know, you are on the clock all the time doing something. And as I was waiting for you, I was like, well, I got to get going here because I got some training to do. I got to go to work and all that. So, but back home, and it's this season, you're just free, celebrating everything, and you don't have to worry about nothing, which is a big difference for me to tell that being in America and Africa. Also, I like it being here because you are so oriented to so many things that, versus just sitting and celebrating Christmas the whole time, which is a good thing to do, but also life goes on. And usually after Christmas in Africa, January is the worst month because people spend all of their money and they don't have nothing. So then people start struggling from the beginning. But in America, you maintain, you know, I do this, but I still have to do this. That's the good thing about it. And that's the difference.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Gina McAndrews and I have collected stories about Christmas celebrations around the world, starting with Sudan. We found a lovely Christmas song for Sudan, but most of the other things that we found were from as far away as Germany and Australia. I know you spent a Christmas in Australia, Gina.
Yes, I did. That was a few years ago. I was working out on a cattle and sheep property out in the outback in Queensland. And so we were 3 hours from any town. and the nearest town was about 10 houses and a couple shops. But, yeah, so out there, the family got together. We had a small tree with some lights, but it was summer there. So we had a great big barbecue, and they had a lamb, and they actually did have some shrimp. I don't know if you've heard of that song, Put Another Shrimp on the Barbie. And my folks came down from Iowa, and it was 20 or 30 below, but it was over 100 degrees when they came down. And they have a big barbecue, and they have these paper hats that people wear. And it's not anything too different, but it's there's no church or anything because we're so far out. And so everybody went around and said what they were thankful and grateful for and what they appreciated in each person. And then we spent the day eating and telling stories.
If you ever come down under to Australia, you'll find the natives friendly as can be.
G'day, here you go, mate.
And if by chance you meet a dinkum Aussie, there's every chance he'll ask you home to tea. But there's no way that they won't make you welcome, 'cause an Aussie host's unflappable, you see. They just toss another shrimp on the barbie. Come on in, you're welcome as can be. Toss another shrimp on the barbie. Someone special's coming in for tea. Toss another shrimp on the barbie. Come on in, you're welcome as can be.
That is certainly the most unusual way to celebrate Christmas that I've heard of.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio.
And we're bringing you stories of how Christmas is celebrated around the world. We're drawing on immigrants as well as some of our own experiences. I have another immigrant story from someone here. This one has music at the end. I wanted to stress the immigrant communities here in Ames. You could hear that in Sandra's interview about a Sudanese Christmas. Our next guest is Karen Stein, who is an active member of a Spanish-speaking group at St. Cecilia's Catholic Church here in Ames, and an immigrant from Nicaragua.
Karen, you are from Nicaragua, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
And when did you leave?
I left Nicaragua at the age of 10 in 1980.
In 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a war going on then, right?
That's right. Communist overtaking Somoza, the president, at that point.
So do you still have family there?
I do. I have family in my hometown and three major cities in Nicaragua.
And are the conditions endangered?
Right now in Nicaragua, it's been violent, I would say, for the past 2 years or so since Carlos Fonseca became president, pretty much. Students have been kidnapped. People have lost their lives. It's definitely a tough time to be there. As far as my extended family members that are there, they've been safe for the most part.
You've been in the U.S. for a long time.
I am a naturalized citizen.
Are you Catholic? So did you have Catholic celebrations there?
We did. Start by giving you my full name, Karen Lucia Stein, my married name, and maiden name is Cabanas. So when I was growing up, about 75% of Nicaraguans were Catholic. So celebrating Christmas was a huge deal, huge festivities all the time. And the celebrations began way before December, actually, towards the end of November. So December 7th is the Immaculate Conception, the Virgin Mary. So 9 days before that, we would start with the novenas, which are prayers honoring Jesus' mom, basically. And we would start at someone's house, and every night it would be celebrated at somebody's house, and they would take the statue of the Virgin Mary holding at times the baby Jesus or seeing with her little tummy when she was pregnant. And it was a way to respect her. We pray to God, and we asked the Virgin and saints to pray for us, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So the festivities would begin 2 days before December 1st. And that's what we called in Nicaragua, griterias. For Mexicans, is the posadas. And the whole idea was 9 days of basically partying, singing songs, dancing, playing guitars, sharing snacks with others that would come and share the festivities with you. And then on the 9th day, the griteria, which translates in English to the yelling, because people would sing so loud it would sound like yelling, that would end at our church, our cathedral. And folks would walk, even from smaller villages from our town, they would come into the city and go basically from home to home. Sometimes they would stay there for the 9 days. Sometimes we would be hosting strangers, you know, so they can sleep and continue going. It was a huge deal. You would end at the cathedral on the 9th day or December 7th. And then at someone's house, there was always dinner for anyone that wanted to come and more music and partying. So that's what would start off or kick off the Christmas celebrations. Quite a few days before Christmas, as we get closer to Christmas, December 24th is a huge deal as well. So December 24th, people would not work. They would start celebrating on the street, festivals, singing, dancing, you know. And then on the 24th at midnight, right after Mass ended, they would have fireworks. Because the reason for that was that's when baby Jesus was born. And after that, on the 25th, people would continue visiting each other. And it was just a very joyful time, very community-oriented. I remember as a child, as a young child, getting dressed up, sometimes as a shepherd, sometimes as, you know, myself or anything else you wanted to dress up as, and waiting to go to Mass. Eventually, we would pass out from being so tired, and we would wake up the next morning. And the first thing we would all be very excited about was the fact that it was Jesus' birthday. We didn't have Santa Claus like we have Santa Claus here in the States. It was all about baby Jesus and what gift, you know, the gift also that baby Jesus shared with us. It was kind of weird as a kid because when you would go to someone's birthday party, you would bring a gift. But for Christmas, the idea was that baby Jesus would give you a gift, you know, kind of like what we think of Santa Claus here in the States.
So how did your parents manage that? I assume that your parents played perhaps the part of baby Jesus, but the gift givers.
So it was very community-based. We had two older ladies who were not blessed with kids. So we would take turns. They would take turns every year, and we would go the whole neighborhood. Imagine about 30, 40 kids going to one of their houses, and they would be reading the story, you know, of baby Jesus and Mary and Joseph finding a place, you know, the barn.
Yes.
And we would go through that whole story. And one of the two ladies, we used to call them grandmas, or grandma's house. So it was just a bunch of kids. And right after she was done, either one was done with the story, then all the kids were given a snack and a drink. And we would go home with the instructions of, okay, you have to go to sleep at a certain time so you can also be part of the festivities, but also be ready for Jesus' birth. So it was a very exciting time going to their house because you knew we were getting so close to Christmas. And it was also incredibly awesome to see so many kids in one house. my grandfather. We lived with my grandfather because in Nicaragua, like in Spain, I'm a part Spaniard. It's very common for generations to live in the same household. Honestly, you just add another room. You build another room. You build into the house so more family members could be more comfortable and fit in. So we lived in my grandfather's house, and he had an open lot right next to his house. So for Christmas, like Easter, and at least 4 or 5 times throughout the year, my grandfather was one of the doctors in our town. He would open that whole lot, and people would bring their tables and chairs, and everybody would help decorate that huge lot. And it was open to anyone who wanted to come and celebrate, eat, dance, sing, play, whatever. And my grandfather always made sure that every kid that came left with a gift. And he wasn't the only person doing it. Excuse me, a lot of help from different people in the community because it was a big deal. So very strong community-based celebrations. And the celebrations were not just Catholics that would come. Our Jewish friends would also come. It was open to anyone and everyone. Even the priest would come. So it was definitely a fun time. When I first moved to the States, when I met up with my parents, we lived in Miami. Miami has so many Latinos, so many Spanish-speaking folks there, immigrants, that you see some of these traditions still being celebrated today. I know that my parents, every year they go to the griterias or posadas, and they follow pretty close traditions to what we had in Nicaragua, with the exception of closing down streets to have a huge party. That's not so easy. But I do know that they do have friends that have farms or open lots, and they do go and have their celebrations there in honoring Jesus' mother. And also on the 24th, and it's usually not, it's hard to find anything live until COVID hit, honestly. And it will either be from the past year or, you know, like a few days later for someone's uploaded a video of the midnight mass in Nicaragua or Spain, Madrid, where my family's also from, half of my family's from. You know, mainly because I miss it, and just to kind of fill that missing part of my tradition. And showing my kids also, this is what life was like for me when I was a kid. These are some of the stuff we did. Because what we do here in Ames is very different from the way I grew up.
Well, yes, you must have really missed it in the beginning. Or was the community down in Florida really pretty close?
The community in Miami, in Florida, is very active. So I never really missed out on that, with the exception of the street festivals that we had a lot of. But the church celebrations, the singing and dancing and partying around Christmas and the novenas, those are still celebrated in Miami. They're still happening today. So as a teenager, when I came here, or, you know, preteen, I had the opportunity, thankfully, to partake in those traditions in Florida.
You must really must really miss this here in Ames.
You know, I do, but it's different. There are other traditions that my kids have taken part of, such as the family reunions that we have and visiting grandma and grandfather. It is different, and showing them all these traditions online, it's obviously very different for them. So my hope is one of these years, maybe take them to Miami, or in Des Moines or Marshalltown, where we have a Hispanic community, that would probably be more likely, and take them over so they can see what it was like.
That was Karen Stein, who lives here in Ames, describing her real nostalgia for Christmas in Nicaragua. But it surprised me when I was searching out these stories was when you listen to the news, when you hear the names of these countries, but you usually hear them in context of wars that are going on there and the difficulties that people are having. Well, of course, people are having difficulties. And we started out in Karen's interview with the war in Nicaragua. But when she started talking about Christmas, it sounded that it was just overwhelming what her memories were of that period there, as well as what you found when you came to America. So it's a different picture when you look at communities. Now, Gina, I know you were traveling other places besides Australia. Where did you go, and where were you at Christmas and your various travels?
One time I was living with the Zapotec group of Native Americans up in Oaxaca in the mountains over Christmas, and I stayed with them for 6 months. But they celebrated Christmas for almost a week. I mean, it took a couple days to just prepare food. They especially made a lot of tamales. And then they had a little bit of European tradition. They have what they call big band, or oompa bands, they call them sometimes there. And they would play, you know, and people come back, because a lot of the younger generation had moved away, because this was way up in the mountains, and people were still cooking over fires and going without, you know, electricity and running water and those sorts of things. And so younger generation would come back, and so they'd have a lot of just gatherings where people would sit around and talk, telling stories. And then on Christmas Eve was one of the bigger, more important celebrations. They had a walking ceremony. Some of them they had a church ceremony. And then the kids would walk what they call a pasada. The people would walk with candles, and they might stop at a couple people's houses. It was kind of to replicate looking for shelter. And then they would meet in usually there's a little bit of a community center. And it wouldn't be the whole village. There's probably two or three different groups. And everybody would bring food. And they'd have tamales, and they'd have real chocolate off of, you know, they grow the trees that grow the chocolate. And so they would have some milk and make hot chocolate and coffee and big tortillas. And all the kids would have piñatas to hit and share candy. And, and mostly just sitting, you know, telling stories and sitting around celebrating and the piñatas, and the kids. There wasn't any big noisy things or anything like that. It was just a lot of community and a lot of celebration and sharing time with their families, and sharing food was a big, big focus.
How did you get to Oaxaca? I don't mean literally. I just meant...
Yeah, Well, that was part of my master's work. I was working with Ricardo Salvador, and his great uncle was the, what they call curandero, or the medicine man in the village. And I was looking for a project that involved kind of indigenous skills, and I didn't want a traditional type of project, and I wanted something international. And anyway, his uncle would like someone to record the plant. And so I was very excited in that, having just traveled a lot, international villages and things with indigenous people, and having learned a lot about indigenous plants and indigenous skills as far as starting fires and building houses with, you know, natural materials and all those sorts of things really fascinated me. So anyway, Ricardo told me about that, and I jumped at the opportunity, and so he took me down and introduced me, and I lived with them for 6 months and went around with them and worked with them every day. From, I mean, they planted and grew all of their own food. Everything was done by hand. So you made these great big tortillas that were probably 18 inches in diameter, and over the fires every morning. And we grew a lot of corn and beans and tomatoes. And they had a couple sheep, and we collected firewood every day while we were taking the sheep out to graze. And, and I recorded all the plants. And then what we did was, I mean, I made it into a master's thesis, but also for the village, we then, I worked with Ricardo's cousin, and she helped, well, she did the work, translated it into Zapotec and most of the Spanish. I got all the plant names and had everything in English. Then we all worked together to get everything into Spanish and into Zapotec. And so then we shared the booklets with the people in the village. So, yeah, and then I continued to go down every year for, well, until they passed away. That was in 94, and I went down every year until 2006.
And is the village still there? Do you know?
The village is still there, but it's, when I was there, there was, you know, no cars, no, I mean, there was only walking trails. There was a gravel road that came from the city. It came once a day, but it was a couple miles away. So you had to walk, you know, to catch the bus. Whereas now I've heard in the last 5-6 years, there's some of the younger generation coming back and, building new houses and bringing cars and paving roads and that sort of thing. So it's a different environment than when I was there, and everybody was, you know, walking and growing food and had thatched roofs, and, you know, everything was made by hand. Most people had dirt floors, but very clean, very orderly, very, you know, everybody was friendly. There was chickens and dogs, and a lot of people had sheep. And some pigs, some cows, some bulls. There were usually a couple people would have they call them bulls, but they're a lot of times steers, that they would charge a fee. They would then plow, you know, people's little sections of ground. Cause over time they would let it rest, and then it would, it's kind of a clayier type soil. And so it could be hard to, so they would plow it up for a person for a fee, and then everything else is done by hand with a pick. And I got to learn how to use a pick really well.
Is it endangered from somebody coming and taking this land for commercial use, or is it because it's so high and inaccessible not subject to that?
It took 8 hours on an old bus to get up there. But I imagine now that they've paved the roads, it's maybe 6 or something. I mean, it's pretty up there. It's at the mountaintop. I mean, it's a long way to town. It's more of an arid area. They don't really get snow, but it get pretty cold, you know, maybe in the 30s. So, which is cold for there. But yeah, I think, and the land is owned by the community. So I don't know, you know, it gets divided up in families. And so I don't know how that's all been maintained with, you know, with the older generation dying off and the younger ones just kind of coming back and running things differently. I don't know how that's going anymore. Because when I was there in up until 2006, it was pretty much still, but everybody, you know, there was only, you know, a dozen or a couple dozen people under 20. And so everybody else, I mean, they lived till they're in the 90s or more. You know, they didn't really know their birthdays, but some of them did. And the medicine man, his name was Marcelino. He had been to North Dakota in World War II. They shipped, by train a bunch of the Native Americans from Oaxaca all the way to North Dakota to pick, sugar beets. And so they spent the, summer picking sugar beets. And he remembered all the bad words that he learned from the guy that run the farm. So it was really funny to have this, you know, 80-something-year-old man that the only, most of the English that he knew were bad words that he remembered from being in North Dakota picking sugar beets. Bit the bell, he said they were called. But yeah, the language was very different. It was really fun. I had a limited Spanish, and they knew they had a kind of a limited Spanish too, so I had to really improve my Spanish as well as get pretty familiar with Zapotec.
So, but they didn't teach you the bad words of that language?
Not that I know of. Sometimes they would just tell me what things, you know, the word for things, but so they could have made completely things up. I wouldn't have known.
Well, that's a really, really
wonderful people. Yeah, very friendly. I mean, most people are relatively thin because they walk miles and miles every day. But since I was the visitor, everybody thought I was a anomaly, I guess. And so I'd be passing somebody's house and, you know, you greet people because you're kind of walking through their yard, basically. And when you're going somewhere, and every time I would go somewhere by myself, which there wasn't too many places to go. It was just people's houses, or I'd go just for a walk in the woods. People would be, come, vente, vente, vente. They want me to sit down and eat, which was a great honor, you know, that, for them to be, you know, they felt an honor, and I was honored as well to sit in their home, and they would give me a meal. And so it wasn't very long before my trousers were a little tight, and I gained a few pounds eating their tortillas. Though you have one, and that fills you up it's a heavy, good, solid meal. I mean, I was fit and healthy, but over time, I was starting to eat more tortillas and less walk, and kind of had caught up with me.
Oh, wow! So, do they sell any of these things? Their food.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so that was their only income. So on Wednesdays we would walk a couple miles to the local market and bring extra, you know, if we had different fruits, you know, limes, lemons, grapefruits, bananas, to sell, or eggs, or, you know, whatever you might have. And then also to buy things, whatever you might need. But it was, you know, exchanging pennies. A lot of times things were bartered. Like you could go and get a hammerhead there or an axe head, because the people there would then make their own handles. But yeah, it's kind of an outdoor market, kind of like a farmer's market. And then, you know, there's a few, it was a little bit of a bigger village that had kind of a community center, and people would just bring their wares and we carried them in what they called canastas, which were baskets worn, made from bamboo. You take the bamboo and you make it into strips, little quarter inch strips, and then you wove them together, and then the string to carry it on your head, you kind of put it on your forehead, and it, you carried it on your back, was made from the agave leaves, and you make the string. And so then you filled up your basket with what you wanted to sell, and you go, well, hike off to the market. And I mean, this is real mountains too. It's up and down. And then you came back in the afternoon. You know, they would do some talking and meet the neighbors and that sort of thing. And then, walk back home.
You said bamboo. I didn't know bamboo grew in this hemisphere.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of it in Mexico. Actually, I met a guy in Ames who's grown it over on Carroll. Here in Ames. But, bamboo is very important down there. They make it, it's very durable. A lot of their, like our kitchen that we used was interwoven like a fence, like a wall of bamboo poles. So, you know, the air could go out, but yet it was a protected space. They used it for so many things, like sticks for, you know, poles for walking sticks, for very durable. They used it, yeah, for a whole lot of things. For their roof, you know, to help do their thatching. It would get pretty big, like an inch in diameter or more.
You said there's somebody over on Carroll Avenue that's growing bamboo. It you can grow it in freezing weather like we had?
Well, he has it. I didn't ask him how. I had to go. But, he's over. I met him. He says, yeah, he continues to grow. He's got a pretty good little patch of it. But he said it expands and can kind of take over. It doesn't get real tall. And, you know, sometimes the freeze will really hurt it, but it grows back in the spring.
Well,
I didn't know that either. I was completely surprised because I saw it and I said, they were just happened to be in the yard and I was going by. I said, is that bamboo? Yeah.
Well, you never know what you're going to learn when you start talking about Christmas around the world.
That's true. That is true.
That was I think it is pretty close to the end of the hour, and we had some closing music. Mike, could you play It's Christmas All Around the World? As we're closing out the show, we are going to follow the pattern that's been used by Local Talk this week. I like it because we can let people know what's going on for the rest of the day. And we will preview the shows that will start at 8 o'clock, where we'll be hearing Democracy Now. Morning Masterpieces will follow for 3 hours with three very different kinds of music. We'll start with Michael White's Baroque and Beyond at 9, followed by John Bassert's Hot Jazz Review at 10, and one of my favorites, Mop Tops and the King with Steve Chelmsford. Our new show is Real News, Capital Week with Laura Bellin and Dennis Hart for a half hour, followed by, in this time, we have a lecture that was presented for the Ames Women's League of Women Voters over at the library on Is Our Democracy in Peril? And I've really enjoyed putting that together, and I hope you'll enjoy listening to it. At 1, we have Community Bookshelf. I think it's A Christmas Carol. And I think we still have, well, I'll have to listen and find out who's doing the reading. At 1:30, Between the Lines, and 2, we have Out of the Woods. More news with commentators on the Fallon Forum at 4. There was a little preview of that with Ed Fallon a couple of weeks ago. And 5 brings us Letters in Politics with Mitch Jeserich. There's a little news segment, and then an interview with an author, usually, about a book that has some political significance. I used to always listen to this when I was cooking dinner, and the books that they covered were, I still will bring them up and mention them to people because they were so interesting. And at 6, we have a repeat of Democracy Now, which you're going to hear at the end of this show. I mean, it's a replay of what you're going to hear at the end of this show. So at 8 o'clock, you'll hear it first. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today, Virginia McAndrews and Susan Franzen.
Remember that you can also hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI provides a platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The opinions of our guests are not necessarily those of KHOI. Today's guests were Sandra, who described Sudanese Christmas, Karen Stein from Nicaragua. Due to the new programs added to KHOI's schedule, Local Talk will not be rebroadcast this evening at 7 p.m.
Local Talk was engineered by our interim station manager, Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other music that you heard was really from around the world. For Democracy Now! At the top of the hour, as I told you, and for the other shows that you'll hear throughout the day.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell all of your friends. Remember that your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. If you want to become a member, you can go to our website, khoifm.org, and hit the yellow donate or become a member button. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.